Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I'm a health, food, and environmental journalist. I report on Alternet and the Huffington Post, and every week I'm here on Progressive Radio to bring you different guests, authors, speakers, and topics that all surround the question of how we connect, how our personal health and well-being connect to that of our total environment. Because, you know, we have our individual selves, our individual destinies, our perceptions, our experiences, all of the things that impact us, our vitality, our life, and our health. And we're also part of larger systems and contexts and networks that influence us. Everything from what's going on in your community to what's going on in the food supply to what's going on in the society to what's going on globally on planet Earth. And today we're going to go a little beyond that as well, which we occasionally do on this program, to talk about the greater field of universal awareness of which we're all part. It's not a constant theme on this show, but it's something to which we do return from time to time for a larger sense of our whole context, because that's what Connect the Dots is all about. Before we get to today's guest, I just want to point out to listeners that I have a current blog on Alternet, and you can find it by Googling Alternet plus my name, Allison Rose Levy. It's actually been one of my most popular blogs on the fracking industry, something I've covered since about 2008 or 9. And with, you know, certain further developments that have come recently to light around the industry, the gas industry, and its kind of sacrifice of the public trust, and attempts to manipulate public understandings and ideas about what fracking is and what its risks are. So check that out, and comments. Would love to get your comments. Meanwhile, today we'll be kind of stepping beyond that, those material social concerns which we cover so often on Connect the Dots, to welcome someone who is an old friend of mine from my work in the integrative health community. We, I think, encountered each other at various events over a dozen years ago in the integrative health community, which I covered and continue to cover going back many decades. Her name is Eva Herr. She is one of the most respected and popular talk show hostesses on internet radio. She has a program called The Infinite Consciousness on BBS Radio. And she has, over the years on her program, engaged some of the top thinkers in the field of science and consciousness, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. In fact, she's also a certified holistic counselor and a medical intuitive, and has an encyclopedic knowledge of holistic health remedies and all of what the interweave is between how body and mind work together within each of us and amongst all of us. So today we're going to be talking a lot about her new book. It's called Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics. It's an amazing book that asks a lot of tough questions that many of us ruminate about or wonder about. And what's so fantastic about the book is that in it she interviews really one of the most outstanding collection of thought leaders and informed people on these topics. I mean, I think I've never seen a better list. I'm acquainted with nearly all of them. Actually, we've had a few on this show as well, though it's not so much a regular topic. So, you know, we're going to have a conversation about her book and these questions as informed by her dialogues with people like William Tiller, Henry Stapp. For anyone interested in this area of quantum mechanics and consciousness, these are very well-known names. Dean Radin, who's conducted, you know, the extraordinary groundbreaking studies upon which a lot of our understanding of this science rests, as well as someone who, two people who've been on the show and are very dear to my heart, personally as mentors and just pioneers in this area, Amit Goswami and Irvin Laszlo. So this is a fantastic book for those of you who may be new to these questions, as well as for those who follow this topic closely and love it. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Eva. So glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Allison. I'm honored to be here. Really am.
This is just a wonderful thing. You know, one of the things that I really like about your book is that it's bridging, different philosophies and views. One of the things that I notice in this arena is there are people who love this terrain. Larry Dossey, who gives the book a big boost, also been a frequent guest on this show and others, and I know many people in my own circle who, you know, for whom the topic we're talking about today is really the essential questions for understanding our lives. And then there are other people who are almost either not informed or fearful or confused by this realm. And one of the things that you are doing in the book is bridging that gap for people. Can you talk a little bit with our guests about, you know, what this has to offer and why in our time there's kind of question and confusion about it so often?
Well, that's kind of like a multi-answer question, so
mm-hmm.
don't let me get too far down one path because I tend to do that. You know,
okay.
Make me integrate it before it's over with.
Okay. But
the first thing that I want to talk about is science itself. Mm-hmm. Science itself is not cohesive when it comes to that thing consciousness. You know, what is that thing? If you go and pick out 50 people randomly, let's say 50 scientists, not even mentioning the general public,
mm-hmm.
and you say, what is your definition of consciousness? You're going to get 50 different answers from the mm-hmm. world's leaders, because that's exactly what I did. I interviewed probably over 100 people, everybody, people that you would know, you know, Edgar Mitchell, all the people in that book. I mean, Fred Allen Wolf, I mean, just 100 people at least. And every time I would ask that question, I would get, well, it's the zero-point field, or it's quantum entanglement, or it's awareness, or it's aware that you're aware, or it's aware that you're aware that you're aware, or it's God. You know, I just got a million different answers. It's the opposite of being in a coma. And so when I was first doing the book, I sent the transcript to Amit Goswami, and he called me, and he said, Eva, I had no idea this problem was going on. No wonder we can't have a quantum leap in understanding in quantum mechanics. And this was 5 or 6 years, it's probably 7 or 8 years ago when I was first started working on this book, maybe even 9. So it's been a long time before Amit started doing quantum activists. And so I had a friend that was a quantum physicist, an astrophysicist, and so we sat down, and when we realized that this problem really existed to the degree that it was, and we drafted out a list of what we call 20 questions. You know, what mm-hmm. is your definition of consciousness? What is your definition of mind? What is the difference between big mind and little mind? Or do you even believe there's a distinction between, you know, big mind and little mind? Does the brain think? You know, does the mind know? And so I presented these questions to all of these scientists, and each one of them would give me different answers. And so then when I got through, I gave all of these different scientists these chapters and said, look at this. You know, no wonder you guys go to conferences. Imagine 50 scientists all sitting at a table at an international conference on quantum mechanics, trying to put together a model of physical reality, and they all start talking about this thing, consciousness. But they're all talking about a different thing, though they're using the same word. I hope that makes sense. So they, mm-hmm. believe it or not, and you may not be aware of this, but they all get into arguments. Big arguments.
Oh, really?
And so they, you know, they end up throwing their chairs under the table and throwing their papers up and storming out the door, not making any headway in the world and humanity. Now, why is that important? Because quantum mechanics has theoretically proven, I like to say alleged because my background's in litigation, so I like the word alleged. Quantum mechanics has alleged that there is no matter on the quantum level. Depending on who you talk to, it's actually been proven or not. So what does that mean to humanity or society or you or your neighbor or anybody? It means that you're not really here. So, you know, what does that mean? If you're not really here on the quantum level, you're just thought formed, cohesive bits of energy. And it's a lot more complicated, you know, obviously, than what I'm telling you. But what it means is that everything that is thought. So if you can change your thoughts in an instant, if everybody were to get in the moment, right this instant, and what I mean by that is not thinking about what was, not thinking about what might be in 5 minutes, but what is right now? Right now, you are talking to a woman on the phone named Eva Hurt. So that's what's in the moment, not, you know, what your dog needs to go out or, you know, you need to write this check for a bill or whatever it is. Right now, you're doing this. If everybody did that at the same time, for a moment, we would have instant peace in the world. Instantaneous peace all over the world. You know, so it's important, and not only that, but another thing that's important that we learn from this is there is a higher power. You know, what is that thing? That's the million-dollar question. You know, we don't know that thing, but what we do know is that one exists. And so something else is maybe a partial responsible for that thing that's pushing out into physical reality, so we do not have complete free will. That's a trick question there. Of course we have free will. The trick is we don't have complete free will. And I've had many discussions with many different people that want to say, oh, of course I have free will. No, you don't. You know, if you have complete free will, would you be in the misery? And I'm not necessarily talking to you, I'm just talking to the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever piece of misery that it is that you're having right now, would you be having it? Of course not. So what is free will? Okay, free will is the ability to, submit to what is. And I like to use this little analogy. Imagine that you're a two-year-old sitting in the back seat of a car, and you're strapped in a car seat with a little yellow steering wheel, and you're driving the car. I don't know if you have any children, but if you've ever been around the child that's in a car seat with those little steering wheels, they are driving that car. So you pull up to the four-way stop, and your mom or your higher power, whatever that higher power is, God or your, you know, authority person, is driving. And the playground's on the right and the grocery store on the left, and you go, oh, man, I'm going to the playground today. And your higher power goes, I'm sorry, we're not going to the playground today. We're going to the grocery store. At that moment is your free will. How are you going to respond to that choice? Are you going to pitch a fit and get a spanking? Or are you going to take a deep breath? Okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to the playground today. But I can go another day. There is your free will. So the power of what you're going to do with your life is in that choice. And that's important because energy doesn't stop. It just changes form. It is a proven fact of science. So the more with knowing that there's no mass on the quantum level, all there is energy. There's no such thing, you know, your desk you're sitting on, nothing is real. It's all cohesive thought forms. So if you're swinging in a swing, the swing goes really high up in the front, then it swings back and goes really high up in the back. So you have these huge swings of cohesive energy. If you learn how to walk down the middle of the road so that you don't get what I call a tractor field, and that's another term in physics, activated so that everything become, language is hard here because there's not really, I'm not a scientist, I have to use everyday language, but if the tractor fields get activated, they get like really sticky. And so all of those particles kind of go together and make those thought forms that you're thinking. And so you create a reality today that you're living tomorrow with these subconscious thought forms. You know, if you don't like black horses, consciousness doesn't know don't like. Consciousness knows black horse. So if you're constantly thinking, I hate black horses and I don't want a black horse and I don't want that in my life, don't think that because you're going to manifest a black horse that you don't want in your life. So you use visualization and emotion, feeling. You feel what it is that you're visualizing in your mind, and that's the way you're most likely to create what it is that you want in your life. And depending on how cohesive your field is, your thought forms, the more likely that thing is to occur. But you have to remember that we don't have complete free will, so it has to be something within your field of possibilities in your life. You know, that's a big question. What, you know, where did that field come from? You know, that's the million-dollar question as well, from the higher power. But if there's a possibility for it to create or change, that's how you start it. I hope all that makes sense. Now, an important thing there, and I may get off topic here. If you don't want to go there, let me know, is a new and emerging field of epigenetics. You know, since there is no matter on the quantum level, being everything that is thought, including your health, including your well-being. There's a lot of stuff that's going on with genetic testing right now. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy over that genetic testing, too. One of the things that's alleged in this genetic testing from the people who are pro-genetic testing says, you know, what good does it do for you to have this genetic testing done? It just spits out a bunch of numbers, and that's true. And then you run it through the genome genie, whatever the name of the thing is, and it prints out another set of numbers, and alleles, and they've associated those alleles with particular diseases like MTHFR. That's a big one right now. If you're not familiar, your listeners aren't familiar with MTHFR, and you suffer heart disease or high homocysteine or mood disorders, or you have any kind of addiction or compulsiveness or ADHD in your family, Google MTHFR and your particular disorder, and that will send you on a new path. But what we suspect is there are and MTHFR is a gene that's flipped. Well, a gene that someone has, a genetic mutation.
And it's actually, can I say something here? Because we do occasionally on the show talk about epigenetics, but we haven't gone into it in great depth. But MTHFR is actually what's called a SNP, or it's a single nucleotide polymorphism. It's not actually... It's not 100% clear that it's a mutation per se, but there are anomalies or ways that there's ways that certain facets of certain genes, because you know, can kind of be either they can be homozygous, they can be heterozygous, they can, you know, there's certain ones which when they're turned on and off, they govern biochemical pathways in the body, and the way that we're able to function and to process things. And as you mentioned, MTHFR is one that people are looking at because it can be mitigated or softened or exacerbated in its ill effects by nutrients, by diet, by other factors. And so the whole sort of world or process of epigenetics is not so much about hardwired genes. You know, we heard that Angelina Jolie has a gene for a particular kind of very virulent breast cancer, and
she has this. I would suspect she has C677, if I had to guess.
She has a BRCA gene of some kind. I don't know which one because I'm not like that familiar with that. But that's a very, there are some specific mutations or genes that are, you know, like that. And MTHFR and certain of these single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs, you know, sort of things that change are, they're more the epigenome, and they are more subject to moderation and to exacerbation, which puts us more in a point of power in terms of how we live with them. You know, they're kind of part of our biological destiny, but they're not anywhere as mutable or immutable, you know, unchanging and just kind of rigidly programmed in the same way that certain outright mutations are. I just had to kind of toss that one in there.
The important thing about this is Just because you have it, it doesn't mean that it has to express.
That's right.
And that's a big deal, because 60 to 70% of the people, it's an epidemic in this country right now. Not necessarily all over the world, MTHFR.
An epidemic of what?
Of methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase mutation. It's an epidemic right now. Mm-hmm. So just because you have it doesn't mean it has to express. But how does this relate to consciousness? Because the way that we suspect, the reason that we suspect that it expresses or not is based on two things. One is it's what you put in your mind or what you put in your mouth. Trauma to your mind or trauma to your mouth. You know, do you, folic acid or chemicals or toxins or whatever it is, or trauma to your body. So those two things are the two things that we suspect are causing these genes to mutate right now. So going back to consciousness, that's why it's so important to learn how to get cohesive control of your mind so that you can be in the moment right now whenever you need to, not thinking what was or what might be. What am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about that? What am I going to do about this? Because it gives you control. Control over your mind, control over the way your genes express, control over your health, at least some control. You know, everybody's not going to be a guru sitting on the mountain and have total control over everything that happens in your body, but it's certainly a start. So that's what I wanted to tie in with consciousness. I hope that makes sense.
So you're saying that our awareness can even modify physical expression of the epigenome.
Well, based on the
both
work
for the good
know,
and the bad.
You know, I'm not a doctor, and I just want to say, you know, I'm not attempting to treat or diagnose anybody when I'm talking about this. And I'm also not a scientist. I'm a journalist, and I'm a woman who has a deep sense of awareness that I spend a lot of time thinking about this and studying about this. So based upon the work of Tiller, you know, Bob John, Dean Radin, Henry Stapp, you know, a lot of people out there, they have been able to prove that thought manipulates reality by using scientific experiments with meditation or meditative events, you know, or the Global Consciousness Project that Roger Nelson's working on with the random event generators. All of them have proven that cohesive mind does something. But that's the point there, is cohesion. You know, how focused are you with what you're doing? So the goal, you know, I hope to bridge the gap with that book between scientists and between average, you know, the average person that walks around, because today is probably one of the most, I would imagine, stressful periods in humanity ever. There's no time to do anything, no time to love, you know, no time to nurture, no time to rest. So people don't have hope. And but if you really learn and really learn how to believe that mind is the ultimate power and how you use that mind, then you will start seeing changes in your life. And I know, because I've seen them in mine. I mean, you don't know me, but I've lived a very passionate, I mean, you do know me, but you don't know me. You know, I've lived a very passionate life, way up on the swing and way back on the swing. So anytime you have live life with a tremendous amount of passion, you know, when that energy changes form, you know, love and hate are as thin as a dime. They're just polar opposites of one another. So when that energy changes forms, you're going to go from being on this tremendous bliss to a terrible dark night of the soul. And when you learn how to walk down the middle, I've been talking about this. I had an enlightenment experience back in 95, I think it was. And, you know, ever since I had that, because I woke up the next morning being a different person, and I talked about this and talked about it and talked about it, but about maybe 9 months ago, only 9 months ago, was I able to realize that I had really been just a talking head. As passionate as I was about my enlightenment experience and what I learned, and what, because it was a big bang, it rocked my world out of nowhere. I wasn't seeking it. I just blinked my eyes one day and it happened. But only 9 months ago did I really get it. Stop being a talking head and really get what I was saying to the world and to myself. You know, I don't know about you. Have you ever played tennis? Any of your listeners ever played tennis or anything, a board game, a card game? You don't start out playing that game to lose. You start out playing that game because you want the thrill of winning. So if you get into your life, if you really will set your focus on, you would not have chosen a life where you're going to crash and burn. You know, you might go down some side roads along the way and see some crashing and burnings, but that's a free will objective there. You are, in the end, you are going to win this game. But along the way, when the things happen, if you won't stop and focus and get caught up, and as Dean Radin says, go down the rabbit hole, if you just look at it and go, okay, that happened today. Okay, that happened. And don't get the passion attached to it. Don't get the drama and the mind chatter going on and on and on, because that's what I did. And I would have drama episode after drama, drama after drama after drama. And then one day, I realized if I just don't focus on it, it just passes by. Like when you put a little paper boat in a creek, you know, it just floats on down the way and you can watch it go by in front of you, but it keeps on floating. The drama will stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize, okay, now if I use this creative visualizations and not have some kind of expectation about what I think the outcome is supposed to be, I personally, in my own personal life, and I share this because I hope that it benefits someone that's listening, I always thought that I was supposed to be this power businesswoman, you know, working in an office doing business things, because that was my passion and my goal and my drive. I loved it. You know, I loved getting involved in all that kind of politics and all that kind of stuff. And then one day I realized, you know what? If I will stop having expectations about what my life is supposed to be and live what is actually in my life in front of my face, I'm not supposed to be doing that. That, you know, there's no such thing as past lives or future lives. It's all happening right now somewhere in some other time, you know, measure of time and space. So perhaps it bleeds over, but the feelings come from somewhere, but it's not what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Relax into what's in front of your face right now, and everything around you changes. Your relationships with all the people in your life, the relationships with all the things that you're supposed to be doing. You know, I wasn't supposed to do those things. I was actually supposed to stay home and let somebody take care of me. You know, in this case, it's my husband. But I fought that for 20 years, 30 years, because I thought I was supposed to be doing this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept crashing and burning, trying to do something that I wasn't supposed to do, but I thought I was supposed to be to it because I had a passion for it. But really, the goal was to let that passion go and do what's in front of my face. And as soon as I did that, oh my God, it's like I dropped into blissful eternity or something. But it was for me, it was a really hard lesson, because I'm so headstrong and I'm so bent on, you know, women's equality and independence and stuff. And I finally had to realize, you know, that's not what I'm supposed to do, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to do what's in front of my face.
Well, you know, we're going to have to come up for a break here. I have to say I can certainly resonate with that kind of experience. And but people also, and we'll talk about this a little bit more after the break for Station of Identification, I'd also love to talk with you a little bit more at the second half of the show, more about, you know, people who may have the destiny where they have been quietly standing by, and it's their destiny to kind of step up more, because it could be different for all of us. I'm probably more like you, personally, I would suspect. Stay with us, listeners. We're here on Connect the Dots talking with Eva Herr about consciousness and how tuning into that can shift our lives and our way of being so powerfully. Stay with us for the second half of the show, and we'll be back with you soon. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. It's great to be with you today, as we are every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and today we're talking about consciousness and the role of our conscious awareness and understandings around that in our lives. And my guest today is Eva Herr, the author of a wonderful new book about consciousness that really bridges the gap in our understanding of quantum mechanics and how some of the more advanced understandings at the front edge of quantum mechanics and physics and all the rest of what's following along on that, epigenetics we've been discussing in the program as well, directly impacts our lives. You can find out more about Eva's work on her website, evaherr.com, as well as access her wonderful new book that we're discussing on the show today, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics. One of the things that Eva was sharing with us in the first half of the program is her own journey of discovery and how there is a choice point for us in the moment, not in terms of creating reality as in, you know, I can bring world peace or make anything that I wish to have happen, happen, ban fracking now, whatever that might be. Not that, you know, we can intentionally create everything we would like to see, but that we do have a role in accepting and centering ourselves, and a choice about centering with what is in a way that puts us where we need to be and in a stronger, which is a stronger position, you know, than struggling for things that we think we should have or create or be doing or whatever. And that's what we were talking about. Eva was sharing with us some of her experiences in the first half of the show. So I think that's a really interesting theme. I want to kind of ask some questions about that, because one of the things that I do on this show, I do in my reporting, I do in my life, et cetera, is pointing out a number of things on, you know, the level of society or policy toward the environment and other things that are destructive and harmful to life and harmful to the planetary ecology that we're doing, and ways that people can sort of step up from the flow of their personal lives and really participate in things that would benefit us all in terms of maintaining health and life on Earth. You know, there's always the, when we do that, there's, you know, there's more polarization because one group wants one thing, one group wants another thing. You were positing that, you know, to a certain extent, from the perspective of quantum mechanics, we're, you know, we're basically a collection of thought forms. Does that mean that none of our efforts to protect the global environment matter, or how do we hold those ideas in sync and in tandem?
That's a really good question. It's a complicated question, too. Have you ever read David Hawkins' Power versus Force?
Yes, many years back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when I read it many years back. When he talks about, you know, something called gradients and conscious awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So depending... And it's not a, wherever you fall on that scale is not a good thing or a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the difference between being 5 and 50. It's just what is, you know,
mm-hmm.
how evolved are you in this lifetime? How evolved is your, how aware are you of who you really are, you know, from the inside out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mind, body, spiritually. So depending on where you fall on that scale, you know, is going to depend on what you think needs to be done for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can only talk from my personal experience, you know, who am I to say what is right for someone else to do?
Mm-hmm.
From my personal experience, when I first had my enlightenment epiphany years and years ago, there's a predictable path that comes after that has someone, just like Hawkins. You know, first of all, it's everything's fear-based, and there's a couple of levels of that, and then there's a place where you're in a, you know, you, something's just not quite right in my life, and I just don't quite understand, you know, what is it? You buy things, you shop, you do clothes, you do food, you do houses, you do cars, and nothing, you do kids, and nothing ever fixes it. What is it? Well, it's because it's self. You know, you're really looking for a self. So you'll get to a point where, you know, things just aren't quite right. And then you get to the world where you kind of wake up and you start figuring out what it is and you want to go tell the world and fix the world. And, you know, many people don't want to hear it because they have, like if you go, or a particular religion, for example, if you have a fundamental kind of religion and you're coming from this, spiritual kind of self realization kind of thing, you will have people knock heads sometimes. The fundamentalists will be more like a telephone pole, you know, very rigid in their position. Well, you just got to do this because that's the way it is. And you're like, no, we're all one, you know, everything is thought or whatever. So you go through that period. And people kind of reject you. And then you go back to this hibernation period where you're back into self. You don't want to teach anything to the world because you realize that even though you thought you knew everything, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. So you go back into this meditative, contemplative state for a couple of years. And you come back out and you want to teach the world again. And then after that, you get to a place where, you know what? There's no thing to fix because we don't really exist. And so it's kind of, you realize that you can't do anything. You can't save the world and you can't change the world, but you can be the change that you want to see in the world. So it all, to answer that question, it depends on where you reside in your level of awareness about what to do. It's going to be different for everybody because mm-hmm. everybody needs to learn different lessons in this life to evolve as a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of depends on where you are. You know, what grade are you in? I'm sure that's not what you were expecting, but that's my answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. I mean, because I have a radio show, I tend to talk when there's quiet, you know, when there's silence. So if you want to get some questions, then you have to ask me or else I go off because I have this thing about don't make quiet air on your host's
show. Oh,
yeah.
No, I'm having a relaxing experience because I have the same thing.
I hear you.
You know, how do people, I mean, people can read your book. They can listen to your radio show. How do they listen to your radio show if they'd like to?
Well, on my website, evaher.com, there is a page that has links to my radio show. I did do two, one on Revealing Talk Radio and one on BBS, but I had a massive heart attack a year and a half ago, and so the newer one, the Revealing Talk Radio, was kind of like too much for me at the time, so I put it on hold. But there are links to both shows
mm-hmm.
on there. You can just click my shows on BBS is live on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Not sure when I'll pick back up the Revealing Talk Radio, but you can hear me there. And I don't know if you're interested in this, but I decided to go a totally holistic path when I had this massive heart attack a year and a half ago. And if you're interested in talking about what I did to do that, I'm happy to do that. If you want to talk about heart disease or if you want to go back to consciousness, it's fine with me too.
Well, actually, what I would like to pick up on, at least for now, maybe we'll pick up the heart thread, because I think that affects a lot of people. It's really important. But I do want to pick up something from what you said earlier on in the program, which is that this is a time that is very difficult for so many of us. And just, you know, hear your thoughts about that. Because, you know, why this time? I mean, there are many answers to that question. It could be, you know, there's a lot of political, economic challenge, unrest, all kinds of things going on. But I'd love to hear, you know, that I might put as an overlay on that. But I'd love to hear your perspective on that, because this is what you're picking up and hearing from the people with whom you're connected. And I'd love to hear what your perspective is for our listeners.
Well, you know, again, that's a really personal thing. You know, I can't speak for everybody else, but my own personal opinion on that is greed and materialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anywhere you look, it's want, want, want. But I have seen a trend in the past few years. You know, Noetic Sciences with Cassie Veaton and another woman who I can't remember her name right now did a study a while back, and I can't remember if it was a 10-year 20 or 30 year, but it was a very significant study. I want to say 30 years, but I really can't remember. It's been so long. Where they found out there have been more cases of spontaneous enlightenment, of course, all to varying degrees, since the early to mid-90s, documented cases, I need to preface it with documented cases, than ever before in the history of time. Why is that? Who the heck knows? All we know is that it is. It just is what it is. So I do, and you would see it too. I mean, a year ago, when I would go to the grocery store, I could find a couple of organic products. And the way I can time this is right after I had my heart attack, and the heart attack was in September of 2012. I would go to the store, and I would look for food. I wanted organic food. I could find hardly anything. Because I remember walking into the store, and it was probably about December, and the store set manager said, "Are you finding everything you need?" And I said, "Yes, thank you." And then he turned around and walked off, and I burst into tears. And he turned around and was, "What is it?" And I said, you got this whole store full of food, and I can't find anything to eat. So within the next few months, and it didn't have anything to do with me because it was in every grocery store, within the next 6 months, maybe 9 months, 6 to 9 months, not only did the store fill up with organic food, but it filled up with organic free-range chicken and organic grass-fed beef. You know, in the grocery store, the regular grocery store, and that change happened in 6 to 9 months. So that's a big deal. You know, people are realizing the importance of taking care of what's around them. And why that's happening, you know, awareness. That's the only thing I know to say is awareness. Perhaps because more people today are trying to walk their talk and be better at what it is that they are on the inside, perhaps. I don't know. But that is a change that I've seen.
Tell us a little bit about, we have about, I guess, around 10 more minutes for the show. You know, tell us a little bit more about your both experience and what your understanding of heart disease is.
Heart disease? Is that what you said? Okay.
Yep.
I wish we had more time, but I'll just preface it to say I have double MTHFR mutations. My parents were third. I'm from Alabama, and my parents were third cousins, you know. And I'm Cherokee, and so I had double MTHFR mutations with C677A1298. So all of a sudden, I had a massive heart attack.
Do you mean to say you had four, you know, of those mutations? In other words, because there are two of each mutation, and those are two different MTHFRs. You're saying you had all four were
I had more than that. I have more than that. But the important thing is I had really high homocysteine. I had astronomical cholesterol imbalances. You know, and so many people talk about, oh, I don't want to have any fat. I don't want to have any cholesterol. They eat low-fat yogurt. They don't eat any meat. And that's a bad thing. You mm-hmm. need cholesterol. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a hormone. It's the thing that makes all other hormones in your body. Without it, you'll die.
Mm-hmm.
So I had these horrible lab values. It's just terrible. I went on a paleo diet, pretty mm-hmm. kind of, you know, anything. And I'm not rigid about it. I eat anything that eats what's in a garden, an organic garden, mm-hmm. or anything that grows in an organic garden. But I limit sweet berries or sweet fruits. I don't, you know, I don't do that. And I don't eat any grains, zero grains. And mm-hmm. I mean zero.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I do eat some quinoa. I do eat seed things, seeds and nuts, lots of nuts,
mm-hmm.
handfuls of nuts and stuff. And so 2 weeks ago, I got the results back from a recent cardiovascular test, and for the first time, my lab values were perfect. And mm-hmm. I literally put tablespoons of ghee in my lentils, tablespoons of coconut oil in my, you know, sauteed vegetables. The more oils I can do, the better my lab values get. It's
mm-hmm.
amazing. And so, and if you saw me today, you would never know that I just had a massive heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I only do vitamins.
Can I ask a question then?
Sure.
Is the nutritional pathway that you're describing, was that your response to the heart attack, or had you been eating that way prior? Is this how you healed yourself?
That's how I healed myself.
So
before,
interesting.
Before, mm-hmm. I thought that I ate healthy.
Right.
Ate lots of chicken,
mm-hmm.
Limited beef, ate mm-hmm. some fish, ate a lot of pastas and rice and stuff like that. Now I realize that that pasta and that rice and those animals that were raised and inhumanely, that, you know, were filled full of rage hormones,
yes.
were killing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it matters that you love your children.
Mm-hmm.
It matters that we love the animals that we eat. And that's another thing. You know, many people say, oh, well, you shouldn't eat animals. You know, we are an acid. We have an acid-based stomach. There's a reason
mm-hmm.
for that.
Mm-hmm.
If we weren't meant to eat meat, then we would have simply a bacteria-based digestive system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe, and again, this is my personal opinion, but I don't believe that it's necessary that, you know, we have to be not eating meat, but I do believe that it's important how we treat those animals that we eat. It makes
mm-hmm.
a difference, you know, since there's no matter on the quantum level, we're all one thing, it makes a difference there. But it also makes a difference in how your body responds. When you eat grass-fed beef,
mm-hmm.
you actually get lots and lots of good omegas that bring down inflammation and balance out your cholesterol so that the level ratio is a good thing.
Mm, that's so interesting.
It
yeah,
is, isn't
that's
it?
Very contrary to the conventional wisdom on these topics.
And I know it works. I don't even have mm-hmm. a doctor. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I don't go to the doctor, and I had a massive mm-hmm. heart attack. I have
mm-hmm.
friends like Steve Sinatra and Ralph Hallsworth and Patricia
yes.
Kane that help me on the phone, but
mm-hmm.
I don't go to a doctor. I did go
Steven
and use
Sinatra, who's a very prominent integrative cardiologist, for listeners who don't know, he's on board with your program then. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he helped me. Now, Steve is mm-hmm. more of a, like the, I forget what the word is, like the Greek diet.
But the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mediterranean.
Yeah.
We're actually going to do a show, and I can't remember if it's June or July. I'm going to have Steve one Sunday and talking about Mediterranean. And the next Sunday I'm going to have Nora Gettigalkin. I forget her name exactly, but she wrote a fabulous book on paleo, talking about paleo. And they're really very, very similar when it comes to fat. It's just how you get those fats in a different way. So, yes,
mm-hmm.
you know, Steve has a new cookbook out, which is really good, by the way. It's a really
wow.
good cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
It goes hand in hand with his cholesterol book.
Mm-hmm.
But
I just heard from somebody who really liked that book, too.
It's good. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing works because I've been stringent about going to a friend of mine who's a doctor to get lab values so I can prove it.
Mm-hmm.
It works. But I do suspect that blood types matter about what's going to work for you. But the things that you should focus on is fats are a good thing for you. Ghee, organic butter. It's got to be organic things. You know, no canola oil, no vegetable oils, no peanut oil. No peanuts when I say nuts because they're really not nuts. It's nuts are things that grows on trees, not under the ground. And it makes a difference. You can't cheat. You really got to walk the talk if you want to use food for medicine. But it works. And it, you feel good. My skin is so beautiful now, you wouldn't believe. People stop me in the store and go, oh, my God, your skin glows. And it's the food I eat. You know, grass-fed meats, free-range chickens that get to run around and peck bugs, and foods without chemicals. It makes a difference.
That's a fascinating story. And
I wish you could hear the whole thing because there was a miracle in there.
Wow, that's great. One of the things that you mentioned, that's mentioned in your autobiography, is that you're a medical intuitive and a holistic counselor, and obviously you've applied this intuition to your own situation along with the guidance of informed colleagues and friends and people that you know and all of that. As an intuitive, are you able to equally well discern for yourself as for others? I mean, is that a challenge, or does everyone kind of benefit from you know, a kind of supporting source of intuition apart from their own?
When I wonder, I do get information, and I will tell you this: if I tell you I can read you, and we both know it in the first 5 minutes, I have about a 95% accuracy rate based on my history. Now, when it comes to me, I will hear. If I try to read myself, it doesn't work so good because I have too much information.
Right.
But a case, sorry.
I mean, I can imagine that. Yes.
Yeah. But occasionally, something will just drop in. You know, little mind runs across your forehead. Big mind drops into the top of your head. So when I get something that drops into the top of my head, like when you get an idea, Eva, you need some fatty acids, and it just comes out of nowhere. You know, if I'm watching Desperate Housewives, and all of a sudden this random thought comes in, you better take some niacin or whatever. I know it's right. But if I try to read myself, I can't do it. I have to read me through someone else. I don't know if that makes sense.
That's so interesting. It does, actually. That's fascinating. Yeah, that's really interesting. We're kind of coming up to the end of our time here, but it's been such a pleasure to have you on the program. And I wish you great luck with this terrific book. And, you know, hope listeners that you will go to Eva's website, evaherr.com, get her book, Consciousness, Bridge the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Super Science of Quantum Mechanics. I think everyone listening today can understand what a rich topic this is, and there's a lot more in this book, which is, again, a wonderful series of conversations with I don't know, the greatest collection I've ever seen of the most advanced thinkers on this topic.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure having you. And thank you for all the wisdom you've shared. And hopefully, you know, we'll have a chance maybe to have you on another time as well. Thank you, listeners, for being with us this week on Connect the Dots. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio. Next week, we're going to be talking about the sixth extinction with Elizabeth Colbert. And check out my blog site, healthjournalistblog.com. Have a great week, a healthy week, and look forward to reconnecting and connecting the dots next Wednesday with you.